If you want to follow along, I'm going to be reading beginning in verse 13. This passage takes place later on the day that Jesus was resurrected. And it says, now that same day, two of them, that is two of Jesus' followers, were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he would be the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see. But him they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it's nearly evening. The day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread." You know, many of you know that in our extended family, we recently celebrated the arrival of triplets. Sue's nephew and his wife welcomed three new people into their family. They decided to get the whole family building task done in one fell swoop. And it's really been amazing in a number of ways. But one of the ways that it's amazing is the realization of how time flies. It can strike you like that when you're oohing and eyeing over the babies of nieces and nephews who themselves used to be the babies that you were oohing and eyeing over. But no matter what generation it is, the babies are always the center of attention, right? If you're not a parent yet, you have a little time to get used to this. Your parents may seem like they're glad to see you now, but once you have babies, you take on a supporting role. You are now basically a pack mule to carry your babies and all their stuff wherever you go. And everybody, yeah, they're glad to see you, but the babies, that's what it's about, you know? They are now the star attraction. You know, and let's face it, when it comes to being an attraction, to being attractive, babies have distinct advantages to us. You know, for one thing, they've got that baby smell. You know, it's just like they haven't been contaminated yet by fast food and, you know, pollution. And they just, it's like fresh human. They always smell so sweet. Well, they mostly always smell sweet, right? But if they don't, you can take care of it. It's another one of your supporting roles. And we just gravitate to them. We flock to them. They're cute and tiny and so completely vulnerable and perfectly innocent, and they haven't had a chance yet to do anything to upset anybody. So really, we're no competition to them. And if your family's like ours, one of the things that happens is that everybody gives their opinions on who the baby looks like. You know, this was even going on with the triplets, who, of course, were preemies, and they were in neonatal intensive care for weeks. And so they're in, kind of hiding in their little incubators, and they have tubes in their nose and patches over their eyes. You can hardly see them at all, but that didn't stop us. Oh, she looks just like whoever, you know, he's got his grandfather's nose or whatever, you know. It's like, first of all, even if you could see them, which you can't, preemies don't even look like what they're going to look like, much less like some grandparent. But, you know, again, it doesn't stop us. This recognition game does offer an occasional, like, slam dunk. Oh my goodness, she looks just like her mother's baby pictures. Other times, though, it has to focus in on specific features. If you don't have the slam dunk, you know, it's more like he has his grandma's nose, or she's got her daddy's cute little bald head, or something like that, you know. But have you ever seen somebody look at their friend's precious little baby and they're staring and they think that, well, what we're all supposed to do is say who they remind you of, but they're staring at the baby and they're staring and they're staring, and honestly, they got nothing. They're looking and they say, you know, she looks sweet, which of course is true because she looks sweet. But really, they're just trying to buy more time because they're thinking, she's supposed to remind me of somebody, but I don't know who it is. So they're afraid they might have that look on their face, you know, that look that says, because you don't want to say this out loud, but you can be scared that you might have the look on your face that says, are you sure this is your baby? Because, you know, in the hospital, they could, you know, get, I don't know, because I'm not seeing it. Because we think they should remind us of somebody. You know, we're looking at a story in Scripture, what we've read here, of these two disciples on the road to Emmaus after Jesus' resurrection. And I think Jesus got something like that look. They were looking at him, but Luke says their eyes were kept from recognizing him. But they had this amazing experience, an encounter with the risen Christ, but they didn't know who he was. So on Resurrection Sunday, two disciples are walking along. They're walking from Jerusalem to their home in a little village called Emmaus. And the truth is, we don't even know where Emmaus is. It's like podunk. It's like nowhere. It's a little town that's not even on the map. But they're heading there to somewhere on the outskirts of Jerusalem, walking to who knows where. And their heads are spinning from the events of the last few days. They're talking with each other, still trying to process everything, when a stranger walks up and joins them. And of course, we know it's Jesus, but they don't know it's Jesus. He doesn't say, Luke doesn't say if God directly intervened to close their eyes to who Jesus was, or whether they were just blinded by grief and disoriented by disappointment and loss. But for some reason, they didn't recognize Jesus. And Jesus says, hey, what you guys talking about? And they go, what are we talking about? Are you you're not from around here, are you? If you were from around here, you would know what we're talking about. All the things that have happened in these last few days. And Jesus goes, what things? These are the things about Jesus of Nazareth. He was a prophet. He was a man mighty in word and deed. But he was handed over to the authorities and he was crucified. But we had hoped he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. They had an expectation of what redemption would look like, but their experience didn't match that picture. And nothing made sense anymore. He said, and then there was this group of women, and they've almost made it worse because they've thrown some crazy stuff into the mix here, and they said they went to the tomb, and he wasn't there. And now people are saying that he's raised from the dead. They said angels told him that he was alive. Jesus says, oh, how foolish you are and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. And then Jesus, the master teacher, it says, began with Moses and all the prophets, and he taught them everything said all through the scriptures about him. You know, no New Testament here. It says he taught them from the Hebrew Bible everything that the scriptures taught about him. I'd love to hear a replay of that lesson one day. Hear Jesus just working through all of Scripture, Moses and the prophets. I can just hear him working his way through Isaiah and the songs of the suffering servant. He was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, familiar with suffering, wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. By his bruises we are healed. Isaiah 53. The prophets declared that the Messiah would come in the spirit of that suffering servant. They had said all along that suffering was necessary. And Jesus rebuked these disciples because they failed to believe that the suffering of the Messiah marked the inauguration of the kingdom, not its failure. Then as they came to their village, the disciples urged Jesus to come and stay with them. So they went to their house, and when he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, and he broke it, and he gave it to them. And right there in that setting, something amazing happened. Something remarkable. This is, their eyes were opened and they recognized Jesus. They recognized him in the breaking of the bread. Now, this was on Sunday evening. But the Thursday evening before, Jesus had gathered his disciples together for a last meal together. They were celebrating the Passover. And right there in that setting, something remarkable happened. As Jesus was about to go to the cross, he would be arrested that night. And in that setting. His 12 closest followers, the people that he had poured into for the last 3 years or so. Something remarkable happened there. They started arguing about who was the greatest. But Jesus rebuked them for completely misunderstanding the character of the new order that he was setting up. His kingdom would be marked by a type of leadership that is completely different from the world's. And Jesus didn't rebuke his followers for wanting to be great. But this thing about arguing about who is the greatest, he said that's a worldly understanding of what greatness even is. And I want you to be great, but I'm going to give you a new definition of what greatness is. And he says, you know how the Gentile rulers rule, lording it over. They lord it over their subjects. They require you to address them with grand titles. They're really just tyrants, but that's not how it will be with you in the kingdom of heaven. Not so with you, he said. But among you, the greatest will be the one who serves. And while Jesus was teaching them, and while he was talking to them about this new understanding of what greatness is, he got up from the meal and took the place of the servant at the table. He took bread and he blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. He asked them, who is greater, the one at the table or the one who serves? Isn't it the one at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. And then they got it. They understood how much their thinking was off. He said, we're right here in the presence of Jesus, and we're arguing about who's the greatest. And we have all these worldly ideas about what greatness really is. And Jesus, the one who really is the greatest, is among us, and he takes the place of a servant. And he points out how different that is. What a contrast that is from the picture of leadership that they had from the world. So now, a few days later, here was Jesus in this little town of Emmaus with some followers who didn't recognize him. And as they gather for a meal, Jesus again takes the place of a servant at the table. And he reveals himself to them by serving them. And that's when they snapped out of it. It was like he had stepped up to the table and said, hello, my name is Jesus. I'll be your server this evening. But of course, he didn't have to say it. He just did it. Like they had said when Jesus met him on the road, he said he was a man who was mighty in word and deed. He didn't just talk about it. He did it. And I'm sure they wanted to apologize to Jesus for not recognizing him. And they turned and said, Jesus... And he was gone. And I wonder what that was like. They said, okay, man, you know, right just when we get it, just when we understand who Jesus is, and then now he's gone. And they looked at each other and said, they said to each other, weren't our hearts burning within us as he opened the scriptures to us on the road? Even before they completely got it, their hearts were already burning. Their imaginations were already soaring with the possibility that the report of the women might actually be true. that Jesus' suffering and death might not be the end of the story. And now that he had served them the bread, they knew it. They believed. They finally got it. All the teachings came together and made sense when their eyes were opened, and their eyes were opened when Jesus served them. And even though it was already late in the evening now, all they could think about was getting back to Jerusalem to tell Jesus and other followers, "The Lord has risen indeed." See, they had traveled to Emmaus in the afternoon sun, but walking in darkness. And now they walked 7 miles back to Jerusalem at night, but walking in the light, because Jesus had opened their eyes. You know, could Luke have been saying that even though Jesus was the master teacher, that what revealed his true identity was his service? Or maybe that knowledge of Jesus comes by revelation through the word and deed. Through the word and service. Just like they had said, Jesus was mighty in word and deed. For these disciples, their eyes were opened. They had an encounter with the risen Christ in the breaking of the bread. It was when he gathered them at the table that it all came together. Their hearts had already been burning, but now they really got it. This morning, Jesus invites you to his table to take bread and to take a cup, to remember Jesus' body broken and his blood poured out. But we gather today not in the darkness of a cemetery, but to encounter Jesus as the living God, but to remember who he was, that we are remembering his body broken, his blood poured out. We remember his death, but we're remembering that death was not the end of the story. We're invited to encounter the living God. In a few moments, we're going to have one more song, and then you're invited to come to the tables that are set up. If there's anyone who that would be difficult for, if you raise your hand, the ushers could bring communion to you at your seat. But otherwise, you're invited to come to the tables that are set up around the room to eat the bread and drink the cup, to remember Jesus' body broken, his blood poured out, and to be in the presence of the living God, the resurrected Christ. Let's pray.